You're listening to The Common Cause with Phil Lyman and Mike Peterson.
Okay, we are here in Blanding, Utah, and I've got Mark Strong and Rex Shipp and Michael J. Peterson all here in Blanding. Came down for a visit, and I'm really thrilled to have them here.
Well, you got a lot of beautiful things to see here, Phil.
I know, no shortage.
I've been here many times, but it seems like every time it's brand new.
Yeah, well, we've got some good things happening tomorrow. Head out to Bears Ears and see Bears Ears and Bridges and Yulee Point, Goosenecks and Old Jado and Monument Valley and Bluff. And so we're going to make
the wide tour.
So.
My first trip to Blanding.
Is it?
So, yeah.
So, Mark, you live in Bluffdale.
Bluffdale. Not Bluff.
You're not
that's
a Bluffdale.
Right.
You're not a Bluffoon.
Not a Bluffoon. I learned that someone from Bluff.
So Representative Strong's in Bluffdale. And Representative Shipp, you're in...
I'm in Cedar City. Cedar City. Iron County, you bet.
And so how you represent all of Iron County?
Most of Iron County.
Most of Iron County.
All except a little chunk of Enoch and Parowan and Paraguna. Other than that, I have the rest of the county. Yes.
And Mark, how about you?
All of Bluffdale and more of Riverton than anybody else. There's a couple other reps that pick up a little corner here and there on Riverton, but that's my area up in the heart of the beast, Salt Lake County.
Your district is likely to shrink geographically with the redistricting, right?
For sure. Bluffdale, when I...
you got some growth.
When it was first done, we were probably 7,000 people. We're up 12, 14 now. So I'll probably keep... I'm guessing I'll keep Bluffdale. I don't know. We'll see where they draw
that
the lines.
That surprises me. I would have thought Bluffdale was bigger than that, even.
Yeah, it's pretty small. When it was first started, it was mostly 1 acre. Hmm. Everything.
I guess I really don't know the boundaries of the city up there. So.
Yeah. So mostly 1 acre. And then a few years back, they approved Independence. It's closer to the interstate. And we are actually one of the more highly densely populated communities now in the Salt Lake Valley.
So does the prison count as population for you?
No, the prison actually is Draper.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
but right. I do tell people that I live close to that exclusive gated community.
So, the gated community.
We usually don't see people dressed in orange trying to run.
we kind of want to talk tonight, take the opportunity since Representative Shipp's here. You ran a non-controversial little bill last year on puberty blockers, and anyway, we just wanted to, because I think that's going to be talked about some more in the interim, as I understand.
Yes, HB 92, right?
HB 92 last session, and it's been set up for interim study in June's interim meetings. We're going to be doing a presentation on that. In fact, I'm going to be gathered with some people. We're going to be preparing our presentation next week. And I started to run this bill because when I was in the Health and Human Services Committee during the 2020 general session, Representative Daw was talking about running this bill. And it didn't end up getting run like I thought it should. And I think he originally wanted to run it. And then Representative Daw did not get reelected, and so I decided I wanted to run this bill. And the bill is to protect children. I believe that this gender dysphoria is a real thing, that sometimes these adolescents, these young kids, have a feeling that maybe they were born into the wrong body. And so they seek to... do these puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones so that they can get the body of the sex they want to be. But my feeling is these kids are vulnerable. They're kids. Their brains aren't fully developed. We're actually damaging healthy bodies when the problem is a mental problem. And so what my bill does, or I would like it to be as we move forward, is it'll prevent any... puberty blockers or cross-sex hormones until age 16. Originally, I set the bill up to be age 18. I wasn't able to get it out of rules at that point. And so to get it out of rules, I had to reduce the age, and they allowed it out of the rules at age 16. So I'm not exactly sure right now whether I'll file the bill when it comes time to do that for age 18 or 16. I really feel like 18 is the appropriate age. That's when they become adults. However, some people have indicated that because an age 16 person can emancipate their situation to where they can sign consent for themselves if they go through an emancipation process, that maybe that would be an age to where we wouldn't allow the puberty blockers or the cross-sex hormones for them, but no surgery till 18. Okay.
Even for a 16-year-old that is emancipated, they still couldn't have the surgery till they turn 18.
18, yes. And so in the session this past year, when I got it out of rules finally and took it to a committee presentation, there was some miscommunication to the committee. Rules committee let it out fast. It went to the chair to
schedule. How long was it in rules committee for, by the way?
The
whole session until... It was in 5 weeks, basically, in rules.
Do you know why that is? So rules kept it for 5 weeks before they let it out. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and the reason I was told is they felt like that the way the bill was written, that the governor would veto it. Because the governor told leadership that he would veto that bill the way it was written. So I struggled with that. I felt like it was a really critical, important thing that we needed to discuss as a legislature. And so I actually did a sub. The first substitute was going to take the puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones out of it. In other words, they could still do that, but we were going to extend the statute of limitations to where these kids, after going through a medical process and getting these hormones, could come back and sue the doctors for malpractice if they didn't feel like they were handled properly. Yeah. Well, the second I actually did the substitute and it became public, I did not have a good feeling about it. I called the rules committee chair. I said, please do not let that out of rules on that. I'm going to do another substitute. That's when I substituted it back to the original bill, only I reduced the age to 16. And I worked hard with leadership to let this out. When they finally decided to let it out, they literally assigned it to the committee the very next day. And so we didn't have much time to get our presentation ready. Most of it ended up being on Zoom.
So when you talk about your presentation, because you had a lot of witnesses that you wanted to participate, right?
Yes. There was a lot of witnesses. And most of them had to be on Zoom because they couldn't get there quick enough because some of them were out of state. And when I went in to do the presentation, the committee chair said I was going to need to cut my presentation down. I was planning on about 25 minutes. He says, you got to cut it down to 15 minutes. And so I ended up having to move some of my presentation to have those people testify and during public comment, and they had to cut their comments down from 3 minutes that they were going to take to 1 minute. And so it was really hard to do. Yeah. And then some of the members of the committee felt like they thought this bill had come out because of the first sub and that I was trying to do an end around and substitute it in the committee to go back to the other one. But it wasn't. It came out with a second sub. And so they voted to send it back to rules. But I can say this, it was better to have it come out and have it happen that way than not to have it ever come out.
Yeah.
We got a discussion started. There's a lot of people that are upset about this issue. These kids are being physically harmed when the problem is a mental problem. And there are studies that have shown that kids, as much as 90% of them that have this dysphoria, by the time they get through puberty, they're fine with their biological sex. Yeah. And so the problem is, if these parents and people are affirming the fact that, yeah, you're on the wrong body, they damage their bodies when they are not really, I don't feel like kids are yet capable of making that kind of a lifelong decision, because irreversible damage happens.
One of the things that I heard about this was that, you know, to some extent, a child might say this to their parents and threaten suicide, or, you know, here's this mm-hmm. grave
yes.
concern because this is a very risky life. I mean, these people in the situation are very high risk, and to have a law like this would really be helpful to a lot of parents who really don't feel good about going forward with some of these blockers, but they feel they're backed in the corner, and if they don't, you know, that their child might commit suicide, where if we had a law like this, say, hey, son or daughter, and mostly daughters, yeah. by the way, by a long shot. But
yes,
say,
in fact, I had one parent call and talk to me about that. They had a child that was trans, that was thinking that they wanted to do that. In fact, they were getting some therapy until the governor did the change in the rules. It doesn't allow therapists to talk about trans kids and dealing with it from a counseling and therapy standpoint. And they said that if they had a bill like this in place, that that would help them as a parent.
Mm-hmm.
So they could say, hey, I'd really like to help you, but this
is
my
hand.
It's out of
my
hand.
A couple years.
I can't do it. Let's wait a couple years and let's see what happens.
Yeah.
And so, nice, good point. That's a thing that has come up with parents. One of the things that actually disturbed me quite a bit in discussing this with others, because I tried to talk to people on both sides of the issue.
Yeah.
Those that were against my bill, those that were for it. I actually had a gentleman call me and tell me that he knew when his child was 3 years old that they were trans. And so they started working with him that way, and they were affirming this. Well, what kind of confusion is that going to cause to a child that their brain is developing? And my comment to him was, say, I had one of my boys that liked to dress up with his older sister because they had her and her girlfriends around. They would like to dress him up like a girl and girls' bathing suits and stuff. But, I mean, he certainly is no trans, and it was just a time he was playing with his sister. And mm-hmm. by the time he was, this was when maybe he was 2 or 3, and by the time he was 4 or 5, he was obviously not that yeah, way.
Not feeling that way.
And so yeah. I think this affirmation, when these people affirm this to the kids, and the kids, the process is, the kids that are trans, they tell somebody that maybe wants to become that, you're going to have to tell your parents that you'll commit suicide, or they won't let you have this stuff. And so, you know, suicide is a very complex thing. I've talked to Representative Ellison, for example, who does a lot of things on suicide in the legislature. I talked to him quite a bit about it, and he says it's so complex that this one issue he didn't feel would cause somebody to do that. It would be maybe one factor in the process. So there's really no solid studies out there to confirm that by not allowing them to use the blockers and the cross-sex hormones, that that'll cause them to commit suicide, or nothing, that those that do transition will commit more suicide later. There's no solid evidence. But my feeling is why cause harm to a perfectly healthy body?
The data is very limited. It's very, yes. It's a newer issue. It's not long-term. And so here, you know, we're allowing these kids to start transitioning when we have very little data to know what their future's mm-hmm. going to be.
So, yes. Rex, what do you say to people? Because I've had several people, you know, I co-sponsored this, as I think all of us here did co-sponsor this bill. We're all supportive of this. But I had several people say to me, this is not the government's business. How do you respond? And maybe I'll tell you what I had said, but I'd like to know what you told
them. Well, my feeling is there are certain things that we have always not allowed our children to do that we know is damaging to them. We don't allow them to drink alcohol till they're, what, 21. Cigarettes, we don't allow them to do that. They can't drive till they're 16. There's a lot of things that as parents, that as a society, we know is dangerous we want to protect our children.
Yeah.
So here we are with a mental health problem, and we're damaging a perfectly healthy body, and it's not right. They're not prepared to make a irreversibly damaging decision at that age.
Yeah.
Well, there's so many things that you can do to kind of accommodate those feelings besides, you know, going to these extreme measures. Mm-hmm. So if you've got a child that's dealing with that, you know, there's things that should be perfectly the parent's decision to make. But when you start altering the body of a child, that's got to be
permanent. Especially, that's right. It's permanent. It's irreversible. Even the blockers, you're on those for so many months, and you're never going to make up the puberty that you lost.
Well, we don't know the long term effects necessarily of what happens to this child when they don't go through that puberty process. There's so many bone development, brain development, all these things that connect in your body because of puberty. Is confusing as puberty can be to any child, right? And now we take that away from them. Now we have a child on the an adult eventually on the back end that hasn't developed in many important ways that nature's would have led them down.
Yeah. Yes. And it's one of those things that we just need to do no harm. You know, a lot of people have said you're getting in the way of the doctor and the parent and the child. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know that we're getting in the way. We're protecting children.
Protecting the child.
And these kids, we've all had kids. Mm-hmm. And when they're going through those adolescent ages and they're going through puberty, there's a lot of confusion. They don't, with their friends, they don't know who's their friend from one day to the next. Mm-hmm. They don't know what they want to even wear to school tomorrow. And yet they're going to make a life-altering decision that they're not ready to do that. And there's other things like Phil, you mentioned about working with them, getting some good therapy and counseling about why do you feel this way, and work with them that way, I think is the better way.
But of that's been stymied, right? By past laws that have been passed that prevent counselors from
but a couple of years ago on the conversion therapy bill that got pulled, but people went to the Governor Herbert at the time, and he went in and did administrative rules change that would not allow therapists to discuss these types of things with kids, and included trans issues with it. So I think one of the things that could really help is if we could get that administrative rule change so that they could get the therapy here, because this is where the problem is. It's this session coming up. I plan to run the bill again. We've got it up for interim study, like I mentioned earlier on.
What does that mean for our listeners? What does that mean that it's on interim study? What does that
interim study means that those items that leadership allows to go to interim study, an interim committee is made up of both senators and representatives, mm-hmm, all together. And you work with the analysts. Mark Andrews has contacted me, who's the analyst that works with that committee. And we've kind of, he says, this is kind of what we're wanting. We're wanting to study this some more. And we want you to get a presentation ready that maybe will highlight some of the things that maybe you weren't able to in your original presentation. Because he said, I've listened to that presentation in detail. I know what it is. I'll probably do a summary of some of those parts for the committee. And he says, you should get some of your people that you think will really help in helping the committee to understand the problem here.
Some of your witnesses.
Yeah, witnesses that will have come in person is the plan that we weren't able to do before. And then see how the committee reacts. And then probably later this fall, we'll get the bill file ready. And come general session, we'll be ready to hit the road with it.
And do you anticipate, do you hope you're back to the 18 years old? Do you hope that it includes surgery as well as the puberty blockers? Is that where you're at right now?
Yeah, I think it should be 18 is my feeling. I think that's the right place. As you know, sometimes we have to compromise some in the legislative process, but I want to start there.
Some of the kids don't even begin puberty until they're 16.
Yeah.
I mean, you got a lot of late bloomers out there, some much younger. But
now there are some things, I want to mention this, that in my bill were exceptions where they could use these blockers. For example, some girls will start puberty early, way too early. It's called precocious puberty. Mm-hmm. They may start at 7 or 8 years old. Well, they want to give them some blockers to get them to where normal puberty starts. I think they typically say 11 or 12 years old. There are also some rare instances where a baby is born that has both genitalia. And so then a parent has to decide, well, are we going to work towards having this be a girl or a boy? Because they could go either way based on the genitalia. Those are rare instances. And there's some treatments for prostate cancer, I understand, that where these blockers can help with that. So all of those exceptions had been drafted in the bill so that the exceptions were there to what could be used.
Go ahead, Mark.
Well, I'll take an experience that I just have to share something quickly. I'll try and keep it under a minute. I had a constituent, family in my area, call me up and want to meet with me. This was a couple years back, and this puberty blocker bill had been discussed, and Brad Dahl was working on it, and mm-hmm. they said they want to meet with me. So they came with two of their children. They have four kids, and they were two children. The one middle was a son, was trying to transition to a daughter. I can't remember the ages, 12, 13 maybe. And this child obviously was either super shy or was just shell-shocked from being a different, trying to be a normal society, but being different. And so they came in and we talked, and I'm at this point had not had many of these discussions with anyone. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so they came to my office, and my intern and I sat there and listened to them. And I just got to tell you, I literally prayed the whole time to know what to say, because it was so heart-wrenching. Mm-hmm. I could hardly get the young person to talk. And the parents were doing most of the talking, and that was fine. And then in the end, I just had this thought. And I said to this young, man transitioning to a young boy, transitioning to a woman, I said, "Do you have friends?" And he said, "Yes." And I said, "Stay close to your friends." And they said, "Listen to your parents." And they said, "You are in a category that has much higher risks than other categories, and so you need to stay close to people." And then I said, "Look, I can only speak this to you in my vernacular, and you're going to have to translate this." This is mostly to the parents. I think they understood what I was saying. But I said, "I can only speak as I can speak and translate this to what works for you." But I said, "God bless you. I pray that you can find peace as you go through this process, because it's way difficult and it's way outside of my purview." And they knew my stance on the position. I'm in support of Representative Shipp's bill, but it was still the feeling that came very strongly to me was to just express love and hope that, that you can work through this difficult situation. And I hope that puberty blockers aren't a part of it. I still hold firmly on that. But nonetheless, God bless you. Mm-hmm. And I hope you can make it through here. So,
I appreciate that too, because that story, because I mean, I really have feel for these kids. It is real. This dysphoria it's real. And they're going through some difficulty. And I want to help them all we can. But I just feel like damaging them with these blockers and hormones is not what we should be doing at this point. There are other ways that we can work with them. So,
well, I'm glad you brought that up too, Mark. I think we've all spoken about this before. We've all had experiences. We're not just shooting from the hip. We've all had some experiences that have touched our hearts when we've spent time with folks who are struggling with these kinds of issues, LGBTQ and everything else. And these are not easy issues. These are not easy issues. We all have great empathy, and I think you're right when we say, "God bless you." We pray for peace and some solace through these difficult times, and hope that by the time you're 18, these folks are
better equipped, become a little more mature, and able to deal with these issues in a way that's going to work for them. But as children, surgery and blockers are probably not the best choice.
Yeah, that's what I believe. Yeah.
You know, politically, we wrestled with this a little bit, like in the conservative caucus, and, mm-hmm. and you and I talked about this quite a bit. And I'm kind of a numbers guy and a tax guy, and in the conservative caucus, there's issues that can come up that can kind of start to pull people apart, because it's like, is this really what we should be talking about here? And in talking with both Mike and with Mark. And I was expressing some of these concerns because I'm the chair of the conservative caucus. You know, do we want to really pull this in? And some things that both of these representatives said to me made me realize that, you know, you can take care of all of the issues, the conservative issues, but if you don't take care of mm-hmm. this central unit, then mm-hmm. then what's the rest of it all about? Why are you even mm-hmm. doing the rest of it?
Yep. Yeah, the culture definitely impacts the policy, and we've got to help make sure we take care of some of these issues. Well, we've probably come to the end of our time. Is there any last comments anybody wants to make before we wrap this up?
I just appreciate the opportunity to discuss this because it's an issue. There are other states in their legislative sessions this year that have actually passed some legislation mm-hmm. to protect these kids. And I think our state, Utah, is a very pro-family, pro-children state, conservative, and I think this is something that's really important that we get in place to protect these kids. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if when they get to be an adult, they hit that ripe old age of 18, and they're adults, they can make those decisions. And maybe they're mature enough to they still want to do a transition, that's their right. choice at that that's time, right. but not yep. not while they're children. And I just hope and pray, frankly, for these kids and for the opportunity to try and give them, these parents, some tools that will help them work with their children.
It's a tough issue, so I admire you for taking it on.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So this is a big issue to take on. The last thing I would want to say is, as I hope that if other legislators, governor, others who can help, if they'd step forward and help make sure that this can happen. This is an important bill that needs to happen. Children in Utah need this to happen. And so we need all the help that we can get for representativeship to make this happen.
Okay. Thank you all.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks all.
Good night.
Thanks for listening to The Common Cause with Phil and Mike. You can email your comments and questions to thecommoncausepodcast@gmail.com. We hope you'll subscribe and that you'll give us a 5-star review.